Dr. Chelsea Todd, it's welcome.
Dr. Lon McCrae, thank you for having me.
How did we meet?
Well,
where did we meet for the first time?
We met for the first time out hunting in Geneva.
Oh, Geneva, Idaho.
Geneva, Idaho. Yes. So you had done 2 full-mile rehabs on my significant other.
Yes.
And he showed me a picture of you a long time ago. Years ago, said, "Hey, you need to meet my dentist. He's such a cool, great guy. You'd love him." And then, yes, that year I happened to be up there and you came up there with Dr. John, your nephew. And we spent, a week hunting together? And I was doing pediatric dentistry at the time.
How did you get into pediatrics? First of all, let's back up.
Okay.
How did you get into dentistry?
I have been in dentistry a very long time. So my dad, when I was little, said, "You should be a dentist."
Oh, you did?
And I said, okay. And I just had it in my mind, like, well, my dad said I should be a dentist. And that's what I'm going to be.
So, yeah, but who in your family was a dentist?
No one.
So why did you say dentist?
Well, so in high school, I took a couple dental assisting courses. And then when I graduated high school, I wasn't really going to school. I was teaching dance, and also I was a Utah jazz dancer for 4 years. So
how was that?
It was really fun because I grew up dancing, so it was a huge part of my life, and that was just an absolute blast. So I was working, but I was a dental assistant at the same time.
By the way, my son Nick, is dating an ex Utah jazz dancer.
Oh, really? It's the most. It's the most fun you can have. It's the greatest job I've ever.
Okay, anyways.
So I was working as a dental assistant. I actually went and worked for a doctor who took my wisdom teeth out. So my dad lined the whole wisdom teeth extraction thing up. And then after, my dad said, "Oh, you have a job on Monday." I'm like, great. just came out of getting my wisdom teeth. You're going to go work for that doctor on Monday. So I did. I started with him. And so it was right out of high school. And learned on the job.
So you became an assistant on the job?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. They taught me on the job. And it was very overwhelming. I remember it was very stressful.
Did you mind the blood and guts?
No, that never bothered me.
Do you think part of that is because of your hunting heritage?
It might, but I've always loved surgery. Nothing that doesn't bother me. So, I worked for him for a long time, and I just started taking courses through the community college, and then I was looking at, I had a friend that was going to hygiene school, and so I looked at the prerequisites. I thought, well, I have pretty much all these. I'll just apply to hygiene school. And so I applied to dental hygiene school, and I loved it. It was really my first time getting into academics and like loving school. And we had just an amazing time. And I met a good friend in school and we just decided, hey, we're going to go to dental school. Let's just keep going.
So you went through all of dental hygiene. You became a hygienist.
Yep.
How long did you work as a hygienist?
2 years while I was doing prerequisites. So I graduated in May and I started courses that summer.
Oh, wow. So you was like, okay, boom.
Immediate.
Boom.
Yeah. I went on a travel mission for dentistry in Ecuador for a month.
And I
started, it was only supposed to be 2 weeks. And then we just kept tacking on another week going here, there, and doing dentistry.
I bet that was fun.
It was amazing. Loved it. It was just incredible.
Yeah. Mission trips when you're truly helping people.
Oh.
Is that where you started your love of children's dentistry?
No. I didn't know I would even like working on kids. So I went through dental school. I loved surgery. And I just thought, do I want to specialize in, but it was like surgery, perio. I never worked with the kids. I didn't do the pediatric clinics. I did the other clinics where I could do, I loved extractions. I loved surgery. So I didn't know I would love working on kids so much. I came out of dental school. I started working in a cosmetic practice because I thought, I want to do full mouth restorations and implants, and that's what I want to do. And I started doing it and it was fine. I didn't fall in love with it. And then I was offered a job by a friend up in Washington in some rural areas. They didn't have any providers, he said, but it's mostly working with kids. And I just thought, you know, I'm ready for a change. Like, what the heck? I'll go learn how to, if I have someone there teaching me and mentoring me, like, yeah, I'll go work up there, work on kids, work in some needed areas. Mm-hmm. And my very first day, I remember I just left in tears because I thought, I can't believe, like, this is what I'm supposed to do, is work with kids.
So you knew?
The day one, I was like, I have found my home and what my purpose is. Like, I'm good with kids. This is, I love this. Where I had been missing, there was just something missing from other parts of dentistry that I've been working doing.
So I've been all around. I've seen lots of practitioners. I've taught all over the world. I've seen some of the very best. And you, Dr. Todd, I mean this. You are one of the best with children and clinicians, period.
Oh, thanks.
No, you really are.
I appreciate that.
You're amazing.
Well, I think I love it so much. I feel like I can connect to kids. I have an empathy for kids. So I loved pediatric dentistry. I was going to go back and get my pediatric specialty. Mm-hmm. And so I did a couple externships, was planning on going back to school. And then I met you, and then that again turned my course another way. I kept going all these different directions.
So you got to picture this. I mean, here we are. We're in a hunting lodge is the best way to put it, right? And we're hunting for about a week.
Yeah.
And our conversations were all about
back and forth. Like, we couldn't talk fast enough back and forth.
Yeah.
And so I had never. I mean, look, I've heard of sleep doctors and sleep dentists, but I just thought, I don't know what, you know, was that had no appeal to me. I had no idea what it was. But when you started talking to me about the airway stuff, it clicked of, I see this in all my pediatric patients. And this puts some meaning to the things I've been seeing where I'm like, why are we not talking about this? What these medications, like things that I had noticed that were just, we never really addressed in the pediatric community. So
what are some of those things?
Well, I would say majority of patients grind their teeth, and we would just say, like, I don't know, teeth are coming in, or kids just do it. Mouth breathing, the sleeping, the ADHD drugs. I'm like, why is everyone on medication?
The number of cavities that we see.
Yeah, I mean, cavities.
Because we would always think, breath. Okay, well, they're just not brushing enough, or they're just, their diet's not correct. The ADD is just, you know, who knows why. Yeah, they probably should be on these ADD medications. Mm-hmm. And then you start to realize all of the stuff that we learned in dental school.
Yes.
It's some of, about 50% was crap.
Absolutely. And most of it wasn't even taught at all.
Exactly.
And so it really made sense. And so it just so happened the week after you left, the person you took all your education from on airway, Dr. Zaghi, he had a online course coming up. So I thought, well, perfect timing. I'll take it. So I took his course, and then it was just.
No, you took his course, and then you took his course, and then you took another one.
Yes.
And another one.
And Pinto's. And then, yeah, it actually was that. So I took. After his course, I took Dr. Pinto's course. I went to Vegas. I took American Laser Study Club course. And I just, then we started talking about what you do with airway. I thought, how can I move into this field? And so that was a big deal. So I had all along planned on, you know, stepping into, I finally found my place and I loved kids. Great. I'm going to go to residency. And now I'm like, well, now my plans are changing again. So I hope this is right. And it did. It just felt right. And I applied for the mentorship program with Dr. Pinto and was accepted to that. And then we went out to California early the next year. Actually, we moved. By the time I met you in September, we came up to Boise first time in October. Fell in love with it up here, and were moved in by December.
Yeah, so we met in September.
Yes.
You had moved into a home in December.
Yes. So
it was boom, 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 wasn't it?
It was boom, boom, boom. Like, whole life changed plans completely. After we met in September, by December, I'm up here working, and we're planning on opening a new practice.
Because you caught the vision
Yes.
of really how many people you could help.
Yes. Yes.
Is there any frustrations?
It is not an easy field. It's a hard field to treat. Like, the treatments are difficult because they're not quick. They're not fast. They're long. They're challenging. Tongue rehabs are challenging. And there's so many different components to it. But it's also, it's been so rewarding because I've given people answers, especially moms. We're in their mom gut. They're like, people have told me different things, but nothing adds up. Like, this finally makes sense to me. This finally gives me some answers.
Do you ever get asked by your patients, why haven't I ever heard about this before?
Oh, all the time. Right?
Right.
Why are you the first person ever telling me this? I've been to tons of dentists, tons of, and the reason I give is it is not taught in school. Any school. Really. I mean, unless, you know, maybe some of the new protocols have changed. But
is there people that are teaching against it?
And there are lots of people against it, yeah.
Why do you think there's people against it?
Well, lack of education, right? But also, we know with, like with any field, there are some people that are not following protocols or doing it correctly, so they have bad outcomes. You and I won't do a tongue tie without doing myofunctional therapy. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people out there who say, oh, you have a, you know, any dentist can go buy a laser and just do it. And does that mean they're going to have a good outcome? And sometimes they can make it worse than it was before.
I had a patient the other day come in, and the mom, I told the mom everything that needed to be done and really needed to have the tongue tie released, referred to Breathe Airway. And the dad heard that, went home. They told the dad, mom went to like the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Dad got the scissors out and clipped it himself.
You're joking.
No. No, dead serious, because he didn't want, he's just like, oh, yeah, I see that. Boom. He just clipped it himself.
How old was?
The patient was like 4.
Oh.
And he bribed the 4-year-old.
That sounds horrible.
With like
that would be so painful.
A toy or something like that. And I was just went, oh my goodness. That to me was on the, is that child abuse? Is that, it's like, do you contact authorities? What do you do?
And so I just never, went, that's, you know, a what? Very crazy story. I can't believe anyone would do
that. I wasn't sure I'm not sure that was a patient or another dentist was telling me that. I just know that happened very recently. And I just, but I, we also know that father that did that is also being done in the industry.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yep. So
I've seen it. I've seen it.
Right? Yeah. You've seen it. And what's the bad outcomes that can happen if it's not done correctly? So let's break this down.
Okay.
Your passion for airway is amazing. You have caught the vision like nobody has caught the vision. You are on fire, and you now are teaching other people about this, and other doctors and dentists and education. Now you're an educator. I kind of look at it as, when in any profession, there's 3 levels. You first become the student and you pay people to educate you. Then you become the, you don't pay anymore, but people, you start helping other doctors learn. And then eventually you get paid to teach others. You're in that 3rd category now. You are at the very highest level. No, that's you.
But we're always learning, right? And that's what's great is we're always working with other collaborative minds. Well, that, like Zoggy, right? He would always tell you he's a student.
Exactly.
He would always tell you he's learning, willing to learn new things. And that's part of the new growing field with airway, right? You have to continue to evolve.
Well, I think you said it best. It's new.
It's new.
And we are learning continuously about it, but we're learning that almost all of us are deficient.
Yeah.
So let's back up. Let's just take the tongue. And what is the percentage of children that have a true tongue tie that need some revision?
On average,
roughly, would you say?
In the practice that I, like when I'd see patients in the practice, I'd say I would have.
Now, wait a minute. You're getting referred. The majority of those tongue ties are getting referred. I'm just saying the general population, it's about 30%.
I would say that's right.
Right?
Yeah. When I would, like, if I'd practice in my pediatric office all day, And I'd have that discussion with maybe about 30% of the patients on a daily basis.
And that's what I see with my practice. I would say there's an airway deficiency in about 90% of all children.
Well, you should have space between all your baby teeth. So rarely in the molars do I ever see space. So that you already have a problem with crowding and narrowness in the face. And we should be, like the book James Nestor talks about, just the more downward vertical growth that we're having, our diet, how, you know, our transportation, just how we've evolved. We've evolved into having airway issues because of how downward and narrow our faces are instead of broad and wide.
Right.
So, you know, I think everyone can benefit from early age a myomunchie, chewing on something that can help broaden the jaw, early expansion. I'd say that's probably most people.
And we
because everyone ends up going into braces.
So
rarely do you ever see someone that hasn't had braces.
And so they go into braces, and is that going to fix the problem?
It depends on what they're fixing, how they treat it, right? Are they going to do it like for myself? I was narrow. I probably have a little bit of a tongue tie and some oral dysfunction. They pulled out 4 permanent teeth.
Which is the worst thing they
could have done. The worst thing you can do. And then pulled everything back. So I have a lot of deficiencies in my jaws. And it would change my whole facial structure if they wouldn't have done that. And they should have just expanded me. So it all depends on what your treatment plan is for ortho. I mean, is it retracting or is it bringing everything out and expanding?
So when you have a mom that comes in and let's say that they're... What is your ideal time to work with a child to get true facial guided growth? I mean, to get them we're not talking just braces or anything else, to get truly help someone. If you said, I would like to see them at this age. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would want to see them even as an infant, make sure that they didn't have any tongue ties.
That's kind of, it's interesting because now we're adding some new stuff to our practice too, which has been done in other countries. Australia is really big into this. We're going to incorporate the myomunchie for the babies around 6 months old. And all it is a little chewy device, but it's having that chewing, that pressure that's going to help build those jaws. So these are easy things we can do.
How expensive is that?
I think they're about $80.
So $80.
I mean, I'd have to check on.
But it's something that they actually chew on, mm-hmm. and it helps their jaws to be able to develop.
And there's some people that introduce this at like 6 weeks old. Mm-mm. I'm very young. These are oral appliances in other countries. You know, Australia is really big on myo and a lot of good stuff for what we do for airways come out of Australia. So there's a lot of little things that you can start to work on versus waiting till you're 12 or 13 or, you know, older. And the problem skeletally, it just gets more and more difficult to fix.
As they get older.
As you get older. You and I know, like, if we're trying to expand an adult, it's very difficult.
So sometimes it takes MMA surgery, which is a full breaking of the upper and lower jaw, splitting the jaw to be able to... And then there, it has its own risks. I've got 2 patients that did it. One can't fill any of his teeth. Yeah. I mean, and another one can't fill any of his face.
And it's a really rough rehab. So if
that's as an adult, but the majority, that's in the severe cases.
Right.
So let's keep with the children. I mean, ideally, if you could say, let's go through the whole process. Ideally, what we would like to see is a child be born with... Who would you want them to see right with?
So if we could make our picture perfect world and take insurance out of it, picture perfect world, how it should be, is every baby should have a visit with a lactation specialist.
Absolutely.
100%. I can show you pictures of my niece's tongue tie I just released and how bad it was as an infant. And how it never was caught because my sister could compensate with her oversupply of milk. I mean, the tip of the tongue is all the way to the ridge. It was terrible. And we didn't, you know, I didn't see her until a month after she was born. And, you know, by then I was like, this is really bad. This is long before I started doing tongue ties. I just looked at her and thought, well, that doesn't look good. And so I called up a friend of mine who was doing it. We went out and had her treat it. But, you know, we had to do a second stage release when she was older because it was really bad. But this should have been caught from a young age as a very little infant by a lactation specialist. And lactation specialists, you know, they get lots of training on tongue ties. They can't diagnose it, but they can watch to see the feedings if something's going wrong, if there's a compensation happening, if they're chewing, if they're chomping. And a lot of women think, well, it's just normal to hurt. It's normal to have pain.
No, that's not normal.
No, it's not. It's not normal. The presentation we just did, the mom, I just released two twins and she could feed one of them and the other one was just too painful. So we released the one and then she said, okay, this one's so good. Now I can't feed this one because now I realize how painful this is. And so sometimes you don't even
what
know.
What a great comparison.
Oh, it's a great comparison.
Yeah, you've got twins and one is feeling okay. But the other one's so painful. They get the tongue tie release and where the tongue should be. And she realized, oh no, they both were painful.
Yeah. She's like, oh, now this one hurt. Now I realize how bad this one hurts.
Wow.
So a lot of this stuff for moms, it goes undiagnosed. It can lead to postpartum depression. You're not feeding your baby and no one talks about it. You know, you should have a visit before you even have your baby with a lactation specialist. It's super important. They let you know what to expect. They let you know, my experience in the hospital wasn't very good. I didn't get a whole lot of lactation support. And luckily I had resources that I had someone come to my house 3 days after and really help
me. So how old is Wilder?
He's a year.
He's 1 year old.
Yeah.
And so you went through the process.
I went through the process too. And I was really on the fence of releasing his tongue.
Why?
It took me a long time to...
What did the lactation specialist tell you?
Oh, they thought he was tied. You know, they marked all the symptoms and like slid me the form very nicely. But he did not have a typical, you know, the tongue is this string. It's holding up the whole front of the tongue. Mm-hmm. It was more of the back part of the tongue. There were sometimes his tongue was up. Sometimes it was down when he would sleep. Sometimes he could suck and hold my finger and hold that suction. So the symptoms went back and forth, but breastfeeding was really rough. But we also had a really retruded mandible. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to rule out other things before I jumped to doing his tongue tie. We did chiro, we did body work, we did all the things. And after 3 weeks, I thought, okay, I'm now at a place. We're there.
Yeah, you knew
there's
it
no
needed
other,
to be done.
There's no other thing we can do. It's not changing, but we did a lot of body work, and which he needed. I would have never, hindsight, I wouldn't have done anything different because I felt good about the body work we did and our timing. I felt it was perfect.
And you did his tongue tie release.
Mm-hmm.
Was that hard?
No. I was wondering. I didn't know how it would be. But I felt really at peace, and I felt really good doing it.
Part of it is because of some of the things that you use. One of the laser that you use is a CO2 laser.
Yep.
Why is CO2? There's lots of lasers in dentistry,
there's
right?
There's lots of lasers, yeah.
Why is CO2 so important?
Well, I haven't had a lot of experience with other lasers. A little bit. I've done some gingivectomies with a diode. I know how much that gunks up the tissue. Mm-hmm. And I know it's just a hot tip. I've also put topical on and lasered myself and knew there was zero pain. So I know I'm not inflicting pain.
With the CO2.
With the CO2. Mm-hmm. And it's just quick and clean. It's just the best laser, hands
down. It really is. Yeah. I've used them all. There's erbium, NDAG, diode, and CO2. CO2 by far is the least painful.
Yeah.
In fact, we had one of our assistants or front desk, she had a aphthous ulcer and I thought they had put topical on,
mm-hmm.
No topical. And we did her aphthous ulcer. I mean, really, really got a good crust on the aphthous mm-hmm. ulcer. And she's like, yeah, that didn't hurt at all. And I realized they didn't even put topical on her.
Yeah.
And so there was no pain. So it, in the ideal world, they would go through a lactation specialist. A third of them would eventually come to see somebody like you
mm-hmm.
that has been trained how to be able to do a infant tongue tie release.
Yeah, and we diagnose, right? Yeah. They say your signs and symptoms are questionable. Mm-hmm. There's some, and a lot of times they'll work a few times with them. Maybe they'll send them to body work, but they'll send to a dentist or a doctor to have a professional assessment done.
Sure. So you do all through the assessment.
Yep.
After the assessment, you talk to parents. Parents are always just so like ready to go.
Oh, they're so excited about it. It's their favorite thing. Yay.
They have these new precious little beings.
Yeah, it's tough.
And so tough. That's where you shine. I mean, I've done a lot of baby tongue tie releases. I am not nearly as good as you. You have that motherly instinct. I think it's a wonder. I mean, watching you guys, I'm in awe at how good you are with those individuals. You, Blair, Hanson, you all are fantastic with them. So you go through that process. That's the tongue tie release side of it. There's things that can be done if mm-hmm. they need to. So you release the tongue. We have the mile brace, mile munchie, mm-hmm. different things that they could potentially wear
early.
Or really early. Like mm-hmm. you said, as early as potentially 6 weeks.
Yeah. There's people doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the next thing. What would be the next phase? Like if they were a little bit older.
So, you know, typically your kids start going to a dentist, you know, they say when their first tooth comes in. Whenever your kids end up going to the dentist, that's when, like, I worked in pediatric offices, so I would catch those really younger populations, and you probably see a fair amount too. Mm-hmm. But I know for me, and maybe other people have had different experiences, but it was kind of the norm of when you refer to the orthodontist, if you see a crowding issue, was when the 6-year-old molars come in for maybe a palatal expander. So the time from when their teeth are coming in till 6 or 7, that's a long time of growth when a lot of our growth is kind of where it's going to be.
Well,
it's a really important growing time.
We know that the majority of the human head is done by the age of 2.
Yes.
The majority.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's smaller increments.
Yeah. But by 5,
you're pretty much grown. So that between 2 and 6 is a huge time.
Huge time. And it's overlooked. No one treats it. And there was a course I took because they were talking about why that is. That maybe there's not enough behavior management in ortho courses. And so that's why they typically treat a certain age population. Obviously, if you're a pediatric dentist, you know, you're typically not treating ortho. But where to catch the red flags of development is that age. And I could show you my niece's pictures from, because she had a tongue tie, and what her teeth used to look like to over time, right? Now she has large tonsils. Now she's mouth breathing. She only shows her gums. So she's developed at 4 years old, very gummy smile. She's in full crossbite everywhere. You know, she's headed down a really bad road mm-hmm. at 4. And traditionally, if we were to wait, that's years of her growing. And everything that happens, just it gets worse and worse. Well, now you have a crossbite here. And now that leads to a deeper bite here. And now that leads to this dental wear here. Like, it just gets worse.
Well, and everybody thinks that the mouth is not part of the body, especially in the medical community. We see now, our eyes are open, and we see things that are happening to the dentition. Mm-hmm. But we also realize that all of that is now associated to hormonal changes, to sleep changes, to behavioral changes. And then that's when they start putting them on the ADD and the ADHD medications. 100%. And it just is this literally, you're just chasing the tail.
Yeah.
And it just gets worse and worse and worse for these kids.
Yep. Yep.
So if you can early intervention and be able to get them into the correct, really facial guided growth.
Yes.
How much better is it? And that's really where we're headed, correct?
Yes, that's what we're looking into. How can we even do this earlier? And we're coming up with ideas to talk to different orthodontic companies of like, how can we implement this even earlier when it's easier? My niece is in clear aligners now that she just wears at night.
So how old is your niece?
She just turned 5.
So she just turned 5. How early could you start someone in actual, I mean, if you saw it, how early would you want to start?
As early as they can tolerate being scanned. Those little oral scanners.
So even a 3 or 4 year old.
Yeah, I scanned her at 3.
Wow.
Yeah. I did. I scanned her at 3. And then my sister wasn't ready to move forward with doing the aligners. And so she wanted to wait until she was older. But we got the scans done.
But we see that we can do some changes even as early 3, 4,
yeah.
Right? And yeah. that can definitely take place. So if you were talking to a mother or you're talking to a group of mothers, these are the signs that you would be looking for. Let's say for a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old, what would be the things that they would need to look for?
So I would ask, does your child have space between their teeth? They're supposed to have space. And sometimes I'll get people coming in worried about the spaces. And I'll say, space is great. The more space, the better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even all my treatment plans for my young kiddos, big space everywhere. So do they have spacing between their teeth? Or are they all, if they're already crowded and touching, you already have a problem.
Yeah.
Major if you're looking at the dental part of it. Are they mouth breathing? I brought my niece up. We did a CBCT. I told my sister, we cannot do her tongue tie surgery. You have to go have her tonsils out first. They're massive. Dottie has slept terrible, and night terrors, waking up, going into their bed all the time. And now that she's had her tonsils out, the tongue tie done, my sister even said, I'm like a different person. I'm sleeping better because I can't believe Dottie sleeps through the night. And even Dottie told my mom, she said, I had a real good sleep last night. Like, kids get it.
Mm-hmm.
Even at 4 years old, she's like, wow, I slept really good.
Yeah, she's not doing the turns all night long in the bed.
No.
And
the night terrors and night waking terror, up. Right. And I mean, so you imagine if that starts at that young of age and it's not caught for years, every night, poor quality of sleep. It can lead to anxiety issues, depression issues, too much adrenaline, cortisol. Like, it just compounds, snowballs.
Yeah.
Our symptoms over time.
And so you've seen this with your own niece, and now you're seeing it with your patients as well. And so how are parents taking this news? How are they, is it making sense to them?
Oh, yeah. I feel like once I present this and I start talking about their symptoms and different things that they might be struggling with, they're like, this makes so much sense to me. I am so, like, I can't believe no one said this to me before. Whether it's bedwetting, choking with foods. I mean, there's just some things that parents have struggled with that you just shed light on. And they get it immediately because, like, that makes sense. Yeah, they can't move their tongue. They do that. They can't breathe. They are sleeping terrible. And so you start saying all these different consequences. And, like, yeah, they have all these things. And so helpful just giving them a solution.
So what is the aligner company that you like the best?
On Demand Orthodontics.
And what is that? So what is that? What do they do?
So it's a company where you can send your records to, and a airway-focused orthodontist will set up the whole case. Treatment plan, talk about considerations, the findings, and what will need to go into the aligners to get to the end goal, whether that's phase 1, phase 2, phase 0.
And this is the brilliant orthodontist.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he really is.
He really is amazing.
He's done, I remember him saying, over 2,000 of these cases, or more than that?
Oh, much more.
Oh, no. Yes. Yeah.
He's done.
I think it was 6 to 10,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He's a second generation orthodontist, and he's done Invisalign for a long time. And then he does ODO, and he works with Spark aligners.
I've talked with him, and I've been on some of his webinars, and I am amazed at what he does. And he gets the vision of being able to truly expand children early.
Yes.
And why that's so important.
Yes.
And
it's set up very different. This is not a normal setup.
Right.
And I have to tell people, this is not a normal setup for traditional orthodontics. This is an airway setup. So we go through the expansion. It's a very different process.
So you're going to have some clinicians go, well, you're not an orthodontist.
Yeah, and I'm not.
And you're right.
I deal with airway. I find that you're too narrow. There's not enough space for your tongue to fit. We need to expand you. So I work with an orthodontist who sets up all the cases and manages the cases.
Not just any orthodontist. This is a brilliant orthodontist.
Brilliant orthodontist.
And they set up the cases. They do the treatment planning.
Yep.
With you.
Yeah, with me. They go over it and show me, and I discuss the findings with the patient, and then we proceed in whatever way he thinks is best. And then they also monitor the patient. We do weekly monitoring. So they scan their mouth every week with their phone. Those scans get taken in and evaluated and make sure the trays are fitting. And if we need to change course at all, it's caught really quickly. Because I've used different aligner companies. I've tried other ones. And this one is just by far the best.
And so one of the things that you kind of glossed over is the monitoring side of it. So it's not that the parents are left on their own.
No, nope.
They truly are being monitored all the way through. So yep. They get these aligners. They're going to have to put clear buttons yep. on the teeth to be able to help some of the movement. And for kids in that age range of, let's say, 3 to 6, are they wearing those all night long or all day?
I would say on the 3 to 5, those are just nighttime wear only. We're getting expansion. That's our goal. Sometimes if I catch them at 6, we might need a little bit more depending on where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Because by 6, yeah, I mean, how many times have you seen the lower teeth? There's no room for the eruption of the laterals. I mean, that's going to be happening right around the corner. And we've got to get those teeth out of the way so we can get teeth coming in. Now, what used to happen is I would get requests for extractions of those teeth very early of the canines to make room for other teeth.
Exactly.
Which I would never do, nor would you.
No.
And that's just kicking the can down the road and making the problem worse.
Well, I used to extract.
I did too.
For them. Because
yeah.
We were just, okay, the orthodontist said this. This is what I need to do.
100%.
Now we realize, okay, well, that's just the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
Because you're just closing it even faster.
Yes. It might look better in the mouth. Like there's more space. But that's a temporary thing. When you pull those teeth out, you lose the bone. You lose that space. And yeah, for the teeth that are there, it looks better. But you've got other teeth that have to come in.
So for people that aren't in the where you work, let's just say there's somebody that lives across the country. They're seeing this podcast. They're looking at this and they realize, you know what? That's my kid. This uh-huh. is what I what this is me. And we're in this situation. I've got a 5-year-old. He's not sleeping well. Blah blah blah. Or she's not sleeping well. Could they potentially go to their dentist, get a Panorex, which is a pano, which all dentists have,
mm-hmm.
they could see it on a flat panel. Could they see the eruption of the big teeth and see if there's room?
100%.
That'd be pretty easy for anybody to do.
Yeah, anyone can tell. You can see. There's Kevin Boyd. He takes some panos routinely. He takes CBCTs routinely on 3- and 4-year-olds. You can tell there's going to be a problem.
And so if they saw a problem, what would be your recommendation? Is there anybody else that you know that is like, is there a group? Is there somebody that they could go to that they could actually get treatment?
So the Breathe Institute is a really big educational company, place, Dr. Zoghi practitioner. So I would say anyone who is TBI trained and is an ambassador, that would be a really good place to start because they understand the expansion. And those typically, some are orthodontists, some are general dentists, some are pediatric dentists. So they're all very, very different. Starting off working with a myofunctional therapist
mm-hmm.
is a really good place to start as well. What's a myofunctional therapist? So myofunctional therapy is training the tongue how to properly sit in the roof of the mouth, getting the lips closed, not compensating. Like if you were to lift your tongue, you're not using the whole floor of your mouth and your neck. So even just correcting your tongue placement, that is the natural palatal expander mm-hmm. of the mouth. And I would say most myofunctional therapists are very heavily trained on tongue space, and they know what they're looking for. They know they're looking for tongue ties. They know they're looking for mouth closed, sealed. So Myofunctional therapists are a really good resource.
And they could potentially get them to a provider.
Yeah, that they work with, that right. they know is airway focused.
You have patients that fly from state to state to come see you. I know mm-hmm. that happens. And if someone comes to see you, what's that process look like?
So it depends on what they're looking for. With ODO and these aligners, we are able to do a lot of stuff remotely. We have some patients in other – we have one patient in another country that we're able to do a lot with the technology that we have now. But we have different appliances that don't need – you know, continuous maintenance, like if we're going through expansion, we have some oral appliances they can wear at night.
So let's back up a little bit. In traditional braces, you put the braces on, they do some cranking of the wires and you see them again in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's movement, a lot of movement, and then they hold the position. Mm-hmm. The aligners, what's the big advantage of an aligner? That's a clear tray that goes right. over the teeth. What's the advantages to that?
So this doesn't happen all the time, but I'm sure if you're a dentist out there, you've seen this where you've seen the roots get a little short and blunt, mm-hmm. or you've had some bone loss. Like I had a lot of bone loss in between my lower anteriors and black triangles I've had to fill in. So when you have a lot of force, something has to give sometimes if it's too much force. With aligners, you switch that force to every single week versus maybe all up front and then expanding over 6 weeks. So
it's little forces.
It's little forces every single week. And so I would say there's much less force at a time. And, you know, they're not as painful. Kids do really well with them. You can keep them clean. So
in our eyes, we see more predictability with it as well.
Yeah, I've seen, I can't believe what we've been able to get done with these clear aligners. It's pretty amazing.
So that's that age 4 to 6. And so now let's take the age of 6 to 12. Now they're losing teeth.
Yeah.
What do you do for these kids? Because a lot of times, again, in the orthodontic world, mm-hmm. they don't want to deal with them because they're losing teeth left and right.
Just let all the teeth come in.
Yeah, just let the teeth come in and then I'll deal with it.
Right. And maybe in some cases that will work. Mm-hmm. But I would say in most cases, you're very crowded and you'd be getting that expansion of any kind so the teeth can come in more naturally where they should is going to be a huge benefit. We can... You know, with cases like that, if they have a lot of changes, we don't do very many aligners. Maybe we do 16 or so, and then we rescan, and then we do a new set as their teeth are changing. Or we add in pontics, you know, the fake tooth for what the real one will look like. And, they can look and measure how big those teeth are going to be, and that's how they plan it. It's incredible, the technology they have.
Yeah, it really is. In fact, I see a day where... almost all of orthodontic movement's going to be with aligners because we've gotten so good with mm-hmm. them. And I think that that's the majority of what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think having a CBCT, which is probably not traditional for ortho, mm-hmm. they use a Ceph. Blair, a nurse practitioner, her, she's in them as well. Like, the what we're able to see on a CBCT for her, like for your jaw, your TMJ joint, it's pretty incredible. Like those things are assessed and they're assessed in 3D. And a recent case we had, the canines were coming in and gonna wipe out the laterals. How many times have you seen that? I've taken out lateral teeth.
Oh yeah.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
That were destroyed.
Yeah, by destroyed. The canines. Yeah, because they come in the wrong position. The canines come in.
I've taken them out
force.
While they were in ortho.
I know.
Yeah. And I take a pano and I'm like, well, the lateral's gone. The lateral's toast. We got this canine, and so
we had a patient, beautiful girl. She was just had finished ortho. It was so sad. She had just finished ortho and from her canines, lateral centrals, it had 1 to 2 millimeters of root left. Mm-hmm. That was it. I mean, and her teeth were so mobile.
Yeah.
And she's 16 years old.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And you think it was from too much force?
Absolutely. Because
or just, I mean, there can be other reasons, right?
But well, but so when you see prior to ortho that she had full developing roots to now after ortho and she has zero root structure, it was not caught at all during the entire time that she was going through it. That's
because you don't routinely take x-rays, because that's what I would always call and be like, hey, I'm really worried about the root length on this.
Yes.
And I would send the pan out.
Yeah. We don't take the x-rays in comparison. So let's just take just the general dentist. So if they're in aligners, you're taking x-rays through the whole process. You don't take x-rays because they're in braces. The braces end up, the metal ends up not letting us be able to see where we need, what we need to be able to see. So the majority of times you're not taking the panels that you normally are taking. You might take bite wings or PAs. So it was missed. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those where we had to scramble and we were able to come up with a really good solution for it. And she still has her teeth. Basically what I did is I just made one big bridge, kept all the teeth, and it was just a fate on the front. And I made one big bridge that tied all the teeth together and was able to stabilize her teeth. But anyways.
But that's why I think a CBCT and the way the Dr. Warford breaks down those images and shows me like, hey, you got a canine that's erupting into the lateral. You would never be able to see that. I mean, on a normal image, it's that little section of where the roots are coming. And so all of that's taken into account and planned for, and how do we get these out? And so they're really in-depth plans, and you can see a lot more what's going on with a CBCT. I think CBCTs are kind of like, you know, the CO2 laser. They're going to be
mandatory,
right? Yes. Like they're just so far and above, you know, and I'm not an expert CBCT reader. I have someone who is that does that for me, but they're going to be absolutely necessary for a lot of stuff.
So you take these CBCT, you take a digital image of their teeth. Then it goes through the planning process. After the planning process and everybody's agreed to the treatment, then the aligners come. Mm-hmm. Your job then is to put whatever attachments that is necessary, teach the parents and the children what to do.
Yeah.
And what's the compliance like? What are you seeing the compliance
Kids are
like?
Great. Compliance is great. Compliance is very great. Kids adapt really easily. They wear them easily. They're very good at taking care of them. They might lose a tray here or there.
Adults suck. Sometimes.
We're terrible. I'm like the worst patient ever. So I'm not a good compliant patient with stuff either. Right. We're difficult. We make a lot of excuses, but kids seem to be much better. Yeah, so
they really do.
Kids do really, really well with this. And I'd say it's far less traumatic too. When they're trying to go through a decision of like getting a palatal expander in or, you know, aligners, they just pop in. We put some buttons on, but
so
I'm not saying palatal expanders aren't bad. Like, you know, I that's what I tell parents. We're like, what other options do I have? I said, you, as long as we're expanding, just there's lots of different options.
Is there any disadvantages from expanding too much?
No, and you can't expand too much.
Right,
you're not going to. Yeah.
Yeah. Our jaws are meant to be big enough. Think about this. Our jaws are meant to be big enough to allow our wisdom teeth to come in naturally on their own.
Right.
99% of us, that doesn't happen.
Right. And that's when we're talking about how many people need this when you're catching that at the young age where you already have no space between baby teeth. You know, now we're talking about, okay, we're not going to have room for 16 years down the road or something, you know, for these permanent teeth to all come in.
So you can treat people from infant.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an age where it's like, okay, you're too old, I can't do anything for you?
Nope. We've treated lots of people who are older.
So some orthodontists have told me, well, all you're doing is tipping teeth. You're not doing anything to actually expand their palate or do anything with their palate.
There's some cases, right, that are more certain that we're like, how much what do we want to accomplish here, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about how much tongue space do we want. If I have someone who they really have no jaw, there's some cases that, you know, yeah, we're not going to get that with aligners. You're probably a surgical case. But if, you know, maybe they can't do surgery. Who's going to jump to a very expensive and a very invasive surgery. I mean, my palate is smaller. It's, you know, average woman should be 37. I'm a 28 because of my extractions, but I'm small. I can actually fit my tongue pretty well. I've had people who are a 40 millimeter palate and they have tongue flowing everywhere.
Yeah.
The numbers are, you know, they're a guideline. There's some, you'd like to see those numbers, but that doesn't mean, you know, you're 28, you need surgery.
Well, we're all individual, and it's you're, like you said, it's just a guideline. I think sometimes you hear the negative of what we do, mm-hmm. And it's, you're just tipping teeth. Ultimately, when we create tongue space and we create even a millimeter, two yeah. millimeters, 3 millimeters,
it's a lot.
That's a lot for
but
a
patient.
But
how many times you just need to upright?
Exactly.
Too? I mean, that gives you a lot, and we're talking needing a few more millimeters to make a huge difference.
I am amazed at some of the adult patients where we only changed 2 or 3 millimeters and they got huge improvements.
Yeah.
TMJ, yeah, pain, yeah. their temporomandibular joint pain went dramatically down.
Yeah.
They're breathing better. They're sleeping better. It's just, it's amazing if you do just a few little things, what yeah. it can do for the patients. Well, I think of my children. I wish I would have known what I know now, and this is exactly what I would do.
Right.
And I would start them early. Early intervention is 3 to 6 years old. I'd probably 100%. Put them in at four. That's my golden age.
Yep.
Is what I would do with that.
I don't even know what Wilder's teeth are going to look like, but he'll probably be in aligners too.
Yeah.
Even if it's for a few millimeters between every tooth.
Yeah, but we also know that few millimeters is a huge yep. difference.
Yep. That's it. And you know what? He's going to be less likely to eat cavities. If you have space between your teeth, especially in the back doing pediatric dentistry, these teeth always get cavities. And, you know, you put some space between them. Proper space.
Well, and as
right tongue posture, we're setting him up for. My goal is to not have him in, you know, really ever like go through some phases throughout his life with some clear aligners, but very minor movements.
Yeah.
You know, little tweaks. And we'll start when he's 4, 3 or 4.
Well, thank you, Chelsea. We need to do this again. Yeah. I appreciate it.
It's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for getting me down this road, Lon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, thank you. I love working with you.
Love working with you too.